You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb from 1480 KPHX, Phoenix, Arizona, filling in today and tomorrow for good Tom Hartman here. So listen, we look forward to Tom coming back here shortly, but in the interim, we got a lot of stuff to cover here in the next 3 hours. As you often have heard, this is 3 hours of freedom fighting, liberty loving, and truth telling. And I encourage all people to participate in the program. I don't care where you're from. I don't care if you're from the left. I don't care if you're from the right. I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, conservative, independent, Green Party, no party. I don't care if you are black, white, gray, yellow, no color, hypercolor. I don't care of any of those things. Everybody is welcome on the program, and we encourage you to participate in the dialogue. So with that being said, let me just give you the number for the Freedom Lines here for the remainder of the three-hour program today, and that number is 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. Again, that's 1-866-987-8466. Also, I can receive emails throughout the program. If you have any comments and are a little shy about calling in on the phone, feel free to give me an email. That email is very simple. It's my name, mike@mikenewcomb.net, and I will definitely look at those emails during the break and give you an opportunity to have your say, at least through the printed word. But also, during the next segment, we're going to have former governor from Iowa, Tom Vilsack, on, and we will be talking about the farm bill that has been stalled by the Republican Party. And I'll tell you, this is something that has become commonplace amongst the conservatives in Congress, despite all the filibustering, despite all of the things that they have been trying to stop the president from passing. The president still has done many, many great things during his tenure as president of the United States over the last 3.5 years. And I'm sure that in the ensuing next 4 years, when he's reelected, he will complete many of the objectives that he had set out to do. And I'll tell you, one of the things that he did, which I am a huge, huge fan of as a physician myself, if you're happening to hear me for the first time here, substituting for Tom, just a quick little bio here. I am a physician, an internal medicine physician. I care for the elderly. I care for people who are on hospice. Hospice is, in essence, somebody who has 6 months or less to live in their life. And I also do a lot of work with the poor as part of the Arizona healthcare cost containment system, which is our Medicaid program here in Arizona. So that's just a quick biopic on me. I love to talk about healthcare. So anybody who has any healthcare questions throughout the 3 hours, and feel free to do that. I'll be happy to answer any healthcare questions. And we are trying to get some people from the other side who do not believe in government-run healthcare. They only believe in the private sector as the panacea to all of the woes of the healthcare system, and I do not subscribe to that philosophy. Quite the contrary, I believe that President Obama, what he's done with the Affordable Care Act, it is a landmark piece of legislation that I think is going to transform not only our healthcare system, this will transform the country as we know it. So I'm real excited to talk about the Affordable Care Act to debunk many of the myths that are being propagated, in particular by none other than the newly minted vice presidential nominee, Paul Ryan, Congressman Ryan from Wisconsin. As many of you know, Representative Ryan, along with the de facto presidential nominee, Mitt Romney, they both have in their sights, in their crosshairs, if you will, to borrow a term from Sarah Palin, the Medicare program. They want to dismantle Medicare as we know it. They want to, in essence, start a coupon system. I know they like to call it a subsidized voucher system, but in essence, it's a coupon. If you remember back in the days, and my mother still does this today. My mother lives in Philadelphia. She's an Italian mother and always cuts corners, and she historically, throughout my youth, always took out the newspaper, and we would see reams and reams of coupons strewn across the table, and Mom would cut out those coupons, and to this day still does that in an effort to save money. And I think that's great when you're buying groceries, when you're buying cereal, when you're buying milk. It works then. But when you're talking about your health care, my friends, when you're talking about life and death issues, when you're talking about whether or not you're going to end up on a ventilator, whether you're going to end up in an intensive care unit, whether or not you can get cancer treated, whether or not you can get diabetic pills to treat your blood glucose levels, those are things, quite frankly, as a physician, that we shouldn't have to cut out coupons, okay? We shouldn't have to have vouchers. And that's the big difference that you're going to see at the macro level here, the debate between President Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, is the fact that that's what they want to do. They want your grandmother, they want you, they want grandpa to go out there and cut coupons, and in an effort to hopefully, you know, scrunch up enough money that you'll be able to care for yourself, that you'll be able to get the medications that you need to care for your illnesses. On the contrary, Medicare, the government-run program, it is a guaranteed benefit. There's no premium support. There's no vouchers. There's no coupons that you're cutting out from the Sunday newspaper. Nothing like that. And Medicare, once you turn 65, you get a Medicare benefit. It's a guaranteed benefit. Medicare pays 80% of the bills, and then you get a supplementary insurance product, which then covers the other 20%. And guess what? You're golden. You're golden at that point. You have a guaranteed benefit. What Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan want to do, they want to do the opposite. They actually want to put the onus on the consumer. They want to put all of the financial burden on the consumer. And on top of that, they want to try to move people away from traditional Medicare. And if you don't know this, just to set the template for today, traditional Medicare, run by the government, mind you, about 85% of all Medicare recipients, if you don't know this, choose the traditional Medicare route, which means they like the government program. They love the government program. Only 15% or so, roughly, I'm giving you rough estimates here, only 15% of these people actually choose what are called the private insurance option, the Medicare Advantage option. These are the commercial insurance programs that are run by the private insurers. So if you have somebody like a Humana or a Cigna, they basically say, hey, guess what, government, give us the money. We'll take care of the patients. We'll do a great job. And trust us. You know, just trust us. We'll do a great job. Well, guess what? In reality, they don't do as good a job as Medicare, the government-run program. And I will have this debate, and we're looking, hopefully, to get some libertarians, to get some Ayn Rand, you know, devotees on this program either today or tomorrow to really talk about the merits of a government-run program versus another program, which is basically the private-run program. And there's no question in my mind that the government-run programs at this particular point in time are superior. They are way superior than the private-run sector programs. But see, what Mitt Romney and what Paul Ryan want to do is because they are private-run companies, privately run companies, and because these companies get lots of money through the premiums that Medicare would give them, they are Wall Street companies, many of these companies. They are beholden to shareholders, okay? So Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney realize that there are literally hundreds of millions and billions of dollars out there that if they can connive, if they can basically deceive the American people and say somehow or another, we're going to give you more choice. We're going to make it better for you. We're going to change Medicare, as you know, so that it's a better run system and that you'll have more options to your health care. Trust me, 100%, they are lying through their teeth. And I don't cavalierly use the word lie, okay? I think it's used too capriciously in our political discourse, but I can tell you as a practicing physician, they are lying to you. They are lying to the American public. Their only goal is to take those 85%. Look, if they really believed in choice, if they honest to God believed in choice, then they would say, guess what? The public has spoken. The free market has determined that 85% of the people on Medicare prefer the government program. And if they truly respected individual liberty and individual freedom, then they would say, you know what? The free market, capitalism has spoken. The people want traditional Medicare. But no, you see, they don't respect the true free market. They don't respect true capitalism. Okay, they want to take those 85% of those people who are happy and figure out ways to financially pressure them to get out of the government-run program, to go into the privately-run programs, and then get reduced benefits, increased costs, okay, and more bureaucracy is what you'll get. So look, we're going to go to a break right now. The number is 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M, and we'll be back with Governor Vilsack. Stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back. It is now 20 minutes after the hour. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb live here from the Valley's Progressive Talk 1480 KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona, substituting today for Tom Hartman here. And also, if you want to participate in the program, as always, we got a full bar to call almost right now, but the number is 866-987-TOM. That's T-H-O-M, 1-866-987-8466. We'll keep those Freedom Lines open. But in the interim, we have a very special guest on the line right now, my friends. It is the former governor of Iowa, Tom Vilsack. So let's get to it. Let's get the governor on the line. Governor, how are you today?
I am great. It's great to be with you this afternoon.
Well, it's great to be with you, too. So we hear you're out there pressing the flesh and meeting with the people and doing a little campaigning. Is that correct?
That's right. I was with the president during part of his three-day tour of Iowa. Great reception, great opportunity to get the president's message out of the choice that folks have in this election. And, you know, in Iowa in particular, we're focusing a lot on the differences in the tax policy, as the president likes to refer to it, as middle-out philosophy versus the top-down philosophy of the Romney-Ryan ticket, and also talking a little bit about wind energy and renewable energy. President Foursquare behind wind energy, which is very important in Iowa and across the Midwest, and obviously Governor Romney doesn't believe that wind is a viable option for us in terms of energy.
No, you would think with all the hot air coming out of that campaign they would be for wind, but apparently
well,
they're not.
It's interesting because they're not supportive of the production tax credit, which is set to expire, and if it were to expire without action, we would be losing tens of thousands of jobs across the country. You know, this is an industry that's taken hold. It's an industry that's increasing income for rural folks with putting these turbines on farmland, but it's also creating jobs, good manufacturing jobs in the Midwest, and certainly important to Iowa and the Midwestern states in particular. And I don't know why we'd want to cede the wind energy industry to Europe or to China.
Yeah, no doubt about that, Governor Vilsack. What do you think drives Governor Romney and Congressman Ryan? Because clearly they're for big subsidies for the oil companies, but when it comes to, like you said, wind or solar or things along those lines, clean energy, green energy, they seem to have an antipathy towards that. What's driving that?
Well, I think it's really the business of top-down versus middle-out. You know, top-down philosophy basically takes a look at the support that big oil is providing to this ticket. And the more traditional energy companies, which are obviously supporting this Romney-Ryan ticket, and the president's view of all of the above. I mean, let's not just limit us to what we have been doing, but let's figure out what we can do. It's the way America has always been built itself, and we have tremendous opportunities, particularly in rural America, with renewable energy. We've increased renewable energy two times. The generation capacity in just 3 years, and reducing our reliance on foreign oil. When the president took office, we were importing 62% of the oil. Today, we're only importing 45%. I'd rather create jobs in the Midwest of the country than the Middle East. And so, I don't understand it. I think this is a job creator, it's an income producer, and it's a energy security opportunity for the country.
No doubt about it. We just came back from a family vacation, Governor. I live here in Arizona, and we drove to California. And along the way to California, as we went west, we always passed a huge wind farm where you see all of the wind, you know, mills out. It's in Palm Springs. And it just, to me, it's just an amazing, just even look at it. It's such an amazing piece of technology. It's so simple, but yet so beautiful, but yet clean. I mean, it's absolutely clean. And then to have that ability to take that wind power and then convert it into electricity and power homes and be completely 100% clean, you know, why would anyone be against something like that?
It's beyond me. You're talking about a piece of machinery that's got 8,800 different parts to it, which means that somebody's got to manufacture those parts. And these turbines are huge, and it makes more sense to produce them here in the United States than shipping them from places in China or Europe into the United States. So it creates manufacturing jobs. We've seen it in the Midwest, and we're seeing it all over the country. So, but you know, this isn't the most surprising thing about this election. The most surprising thing to me is that we've got the Romney-Ryan ticket proposing a $5 trillion tax cut, which would predominantly go to people who are already doing very, very well in this economy, and at the same time, very quietly raising taxes on millions of middle-class families in the country. And increasing potentially the deficit by a significant amount. When you're talking about a $5 trillion tax cut, you're talking about 10 times the defense budget on an annual basis. And so the president's approach, which is to basically provide tax relief for 98% of American families and ask that 2% that's done quite well to step up for their country and do just a little bit more, and nothing more than they were doing during the Clinton years when we had significant job growth, It baffles me that there is this kind of contrast, this kind of choice. But, you know, the more people learn about it, the less interested they are in the Romney-Ryan plan.
Let me ask you this, Governor, because I agree with you 100%. I mean, being a physician myself, you know, we're in the top 1% of the income distribution scale, and I have no problem at all paying a marginally increased tax rate to help out my fellow brothers and sisters. I mean, I think when you think of our founding fathers and they talked about, you know, we the people in order to form a more perfect union, it's a beautiful concept. But what you're hearing from the Romney camp, and in particular now with Paul Ryan and the Ayn Rand philosophy and ideology that he embraces, it's almost like they're rewriting what the founders said, and it's like I, the individual, in order to form a more perfect me, exclusive of our fellow citizens. Is that a message that they really believe is going to resonate with the core of America, and in particular, middle America?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. You know, it seems to me that they just don't want people to fully understand and appreciate the extent of that message. I mean, they talk about tax cuts, and they talk about it in terms of tax cuts for everybody. They just don't tell you the full story, that there are middle-class tax increases in their plan. And this isn't just me saying it. This is an independent evaluation and analysis of their plan. And we see the same kind of interesting discussion when it comes to farm policy. We need a farm bill. The reason we don't have a farm bill today is because the House of Representatives and the leadership in the House chose not to take it up for a vote.
Sure.
The question is why? Well, because they're looking at deep cuts.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, listen, Governor Vilsack, we appreciate your time on here. Keep up the good work and keep defending those liberties and freedoms of the common folk.
Absolutely, Doctor. Take care.
Thank you. All right, we'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Okay, welcome back. 34 minutes after the hour, Mike Newcomb sitting in here live from 1480 KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona for Tom Hartman today. We got the Freedom Lines open right now. A special thanks to Governor Vilsack for taking time out of his busy schedule to come and speak to you, the audience, and me in particular about what's happening on the campaign trail. So I'm going to go to the Freedom Lines right now. We got a lot of callers with a lot of different types of questions. And if you want to participate, as I said, feel free to call. It doesn't matter what your political persuasion is. I'll field all calls. You know, I'm not going to screen you. I'm just going to answer your questions to the best of my abilities. 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M, 1-866-987-8466. Let's go first to, let me see here. I want to go to Barry first. Barry is an insurance representative, and let me see if I got him on there. Barry, you on the phone here?
Sure am.
Hey, Barry, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Good. Well, listen, now, you had mentioned that you are an insurance rep and that you previously had sold Medicare Advantage and also supplemental insurance, so I want to talk to you about that and see what your thoughts are.
Well, basically, it's not previous. I'm doing it right now. I've done it for the last 30 years. I sold my first Medicare supplement in 1985 when I was 23 years old, and I'm almost 52 right now, still working with seniors, okay? And so this is something I do every day, okay? And I have done it now, and I know Medicare like the back of my hand, and I think one of the reasons that I'm a Democrat, okay, and I'm a progressive, and I believe in Medicare, okay? But I like to at least have an honest discussion. And I can tell you, first of all, go Obama. I want him to win. Again, I have seen the pain that has been caused to people out here by selling health insurance that have, you know, we've 40, 50 million people without health insurance. And I've watched, you know, the pain of people losing their jobs, not being able to afford their COBRA and things of that nature. But I think we have to be honest. And, I don't like situations, you know, where Democrats are not at least honest on the other end, too, about Medicare. Okay.
Okay. Well, what are you talking about? Give us some specific examples where you think someone's being dishonest.
Take, for instance, you mentioned that 85 or 80% are choosing the original Medicare. That is true.
Correct.
That is correct, okay,
yes.
Rather than Medicare Advantage, okay? But mm-hmm. out of that percentage, 90% of those people do what? They purchase a Medicare supplement plan.
Sure.
If I lined you 100 people up here that chose original Medicare over age 65, 95 out of that 100 are going to have a Medicare supplement.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I don't know if you heard what I said. I said 80% is paid by Medicare. The other 20% is covered by supplemental insurance.
Right, correct, yes. But now here's what I'm getting at, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Right now, in President Obama's, now again, I prefer his approach, okay? I'm not trying to belittle him, okay? But we have to be honest about this, okay? If we're
all right, well,
I'm trying
to be honest to get to the point, though.
Okay, well, Obama has proposed, okay, that if you purchase a supplement that I've looked at his 2013 proposed budget, okay? If you purchase a supplement, okay, that pays the deductibles and the co-pays that Medicare doesn't pay, he's said that he's going to place a 30%, okay, surcharge on that, okay, on top of that premium, because it's paying all of the co-pays and deductibles that Medicare's not paying. The proposal that they're looking at is having supplements only pay 50%, one half, okay, of the first $5,000 or $7,000, depending on which way you look at how they would do it, which would basically shift an additional $3,000 to $4,000 onto seniors.
Who's proposing this?
Okay,
who's
that
proposing
is in
this?
His 2013 budget. And you can go to a website called protectmedigap.com, okay, and that will show you what has been proposed. In other words, the Young Turks. He is honest about this. He tells people, he says, look, Obama's having to cut Medicare, too. We know that, okay? Let's just be honest. He's not wanting
All right, listen, Barry, I appreciate your call, and I'm going to respond to that in a second. So let me just get to some of the other calls here. But let me – what Barry is saying, what I think he's trying to say, which I don't believe, quite frankly, and I will do the research, but what he's trying to say is that the 20%, Medicare covers 80% of your benefit. If you're a Medicare recipient, whatever your costs are, Medicare, as long as approved, they cover 80% of that. The other 20% is left to the beneficiary. So you have to get general, unless you want to pay out of your pocket, which most people don't, and that's why he said about 90, 95% of the people actually get supplemental insurance. But there are many supplemental insurance programs. What he was saying, and I don't believe this, is that if you buy supplemental insurance, that the president is going to tax you 30, 50% of those supplemental benefits? I don't think so. I, honest to God, he said he wants to be honest about this. I'll check it out. I've never heard that. This is the first time I've heard this. I've been practicing medicine for well over 20 years now, and I cannot imagine the president of the United States putting together a tax on people who are buying supplemental insurance as part of the traditional Medicare program. So I will look into that, but I have to tell you, people, I'm taking that with a grain of salt, and I don't believe it's true. All right, in any case, let's get back to some of the other Freedom Lines here right now. Let's go next to, let's see, I like to do who's actually been holding the longest here. There's so many people here. Let's go to George. Let's see George. He's been holding for a while in Burlington, Washington. George, how are you?
Yeah, fine. Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's interesting. I was just going to comment on when that last gentleman was talking about. I'm currently probably 7 years into Medicare now. I have the mm-hmm. traditional one, parts A and B, and I also buy a supplement.
A supplement, okay.
Which, as a side point, when I first started buying a supplement 7 years ago, it was $92 a month. Mm-hmm. Now it's $163. So it goes up a lot faster than my Social Security check does. But anyhow.
Right, but before you do that, though, let me just explain to people, too, that supplement's going up. Medicare, the government-run program, covers 80% for you, right? The supplement,
yes.
though, you have to buy through a private insurance exchange, correct?
Exactly.
So you have to – so like United Healthcare or some of the private insurance company, AARP,
right.
those are private
right.
companies, and they're the ones who charge you for the supplement. So if you see those costs going up, it's not because the government is increasing that cost. It's because it's the
no.
private sector that's upping your cost of the supplement.
I understand that.
All right. So I just want to let that insurance agent know that that's the case.
Right. But here's my thought. We can solve that whole thing. Instead of me writing a check every month for $163 plus another one for my wife, why can't I just write the check to Medicare and have them cover the 20%? Then we get single payer for people over 65. It makes it a lot easier for you guys to submit a bill to one entity rather than 18 different
sheets. Absolutely. Right.
And everybody comes out ahead except that last guy that called who was selling. And even if he's right at 95% or the 86%, I just figured 10 million people. Because that's the information I got from the Kaiser Family Foundation that did it.
But you make a good point, George. I like your point because right now it is the way the benefit's structured. It's 80% government pays, 20% then goes to the private sector. And then once you leave it up to the private sector, they're going to keep jacking up your prices. Whether it's a secondary insurance or a primary insurance, you're going to see healthcare cost inflation rise dramatically anytime that it's in control of the private sector. So I agree with you. It would be an interesting concept to say, you know what, forget about just this 80-20 plan. Let's just, you know, make it 100%. And if there is a supplemental cost to that, just, you know, pay the check to Medicare and keep it easy and streamlined and single payer. I agree with you. I think that's a good plan, and we'll explore that. So I appreciate the call. Thank you very much, George.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Okay, that's George. I like his idea there. All right, 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M, 1-866-987-8466. Let's get to some more of the callers here. I think next up in the queue is Joe from Delta, Ohio, who says he's going to have to move to Canada. If
Yay,
Robbie
how
and,
you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. Every day's a blessing, Joe. Every day's a blessing.
You know what? This with the president, Mike, he was a no-go from get-go. You know, as soon as him and his wife and children walk on that White House steps, and people blame him for no jobs. Mm-hmm. And it's the Republicans.
Yeah, well, the Republicans, they were blaming him for no jobs. But once again, anytime, look, this is why I call them, they're not conservatives, Joe. They're con artists. If you see a conservative Republican today and they are saying something in a public forum, I can almost guarantee you, whatever's coming out of their mouth, the opposite is true. So an example here, President Barack Obama. Obama, he inherited a mess from George Bush and the conservative Republicans, okay? But if you now look over the last, you know, two, 3 years of his presidency and you look at the net jobs created and you look at prior to his presidency and the net negative growth, okay, you will see clearly that this president has created consistent month after month after month after month job growth. There's no question about it. The graph is absolutely stunning when you look at it. So for Mitt Romney or Paul Ryan or any conservative Republican to go out there and lie to the American people and say that this president is not creating jobs, where are the jobs? They need to look at the facts. They need to look at the numbers. They need to look at the graphs. This president has created an incredible amount of jobs. And guess what, Joe? He could have created even more jobs had he not been filibustered and stopped every single step along the way by these conservative Republicans because they want the country to fail. They know that if there are less jobs or not as many jobs as president could have created, they know that politically that's to their advantage. So they're willing to see the American people suffer for their own personal, selfish political power. And that is despicable to me, absolutely despicable. So listen, Joe, I appreciate the call. I got to go to a break. We'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman Show. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Hey, welcome back. 50 minutes after the hour, the good doctor here, Mike Newcomb, sitting in for Tom Hartman today. We got the Freedom Lines packed right now. And during the second hour today, I got some audio I prepared for you today that I want to share with you because there's nothing more compelling than when you actually hear the voices of the candidates themselves speaking directly to their beliefs, to the policies they want to implement, to their ideology. And I just find it amazing that in this digital age where people now can have their actual words captured on audio, on video, but yet, nonetheless, will still try to fleece the American public and dupe the American public and make you think oh, I never said that, or I didn't mean that, or no, no, that's not what I said. So this is the best way to deconstruct the myths, okay, that are being propagated. The ideology that the Republican Party has embraced, this rugged individualism, this, you know, dog-eat-dog, this social Darwinism, this I am not my brother's keeper, this you are on your own, sink or swim kind of philosophy, this really is what is characterizes is at the epicenter of modern day conservatism. And the answer, quite frankly, the antidote is liberalism, progressivism. So don't ever be afraid to take on these conservatives. Don't ever be able, don't let them intimidate you. They're bullies. Don't let them try to box you into a corner, because ultimately you have the truth on your side. We have the truth on our side. And there's nothing more powerful than the truth. And I often give a quote on my local radio show, Martin Luther King. He once said, "It is not the words of my adversaries that I fear the most. It is the silence of my friends." So you have to speak up, listen to people like Tom Hartman, listen to progressive talk radio, and use their ideas, use their words to go out there. And when you're at work and you're beside the water cooler and you're having a conversation with somebody who happens to differ with you in a particular political stance or an ideology, use these words. Be powerful. Be persuasive, because don't be afraid. Don't be shy, okay? Anytime that I'm out publicly or privately and I hear a conversation starting about politics, or somebody who can't stand Obama, who doesn't like Obamacare, or, you know, somebody who doesn't like Medicare or social welfare programs, my ears immediately perk up, and I just want to dive right into that conversation, because I want to let them know. I want to enlighten them. I want to change their viewpoints and hopefully get them to see our side of the story. So don't be shy about those things. Don't be embarrassed. Be proud to be a liberal. Be proud to be a progressive. If you believe in the government, I believe in the government. I believe our government is the best government in the world, hands down. Hands down. I will take the American system of government over any form of government in this world, okay? And I will defend the American form of government till death, okay? Because that's how strongly I feel in our democracy. But you see these conservative Republicans out there, they can't stand the government. They hate the American government. They want to dismantle the American government. And they want to do, as President Barack Obama said, Robin Hood in reverse. They want to basically give all of the power, all of the resources, all of the money, all of the leverage to those at the very upper echelon, okay? And guess what? If you really want to think about that, do you know who does that? Do you know who does those kind of things? Communists, okay? The very same form of government that they say they detest and despise and don't want to see happen here in America, this is why I call them con artists, okay? Because they're not conservatives, they're con artists. If they're saying one thing, they speak with forked tongue. Trust me, they mean the opposite. Look, we have that here in Arizona, Eric. We had Congressman Flake, okay? Jeff Flake, he's a congressman here in Arizona.
Yep.
He's running for Senate now, okay? And Jeff Flake, along with, and I'll talk to you about this maybe in the second hour or third hour, but suffice it to say that they now want to repeal, we talked about this the other day, the 17th Amendment, which calls...
They don't want you voting
right.
The senators in.
They don't want you to vote the senators in. And if you really think about that, who does that? That's like the Politburo. That's like communist Russia, where they're comrades in the party and they're only in the inner circle. And, you know, and if you're part of that party, if you're part of Big Brother, like 1984 in that inner circle, you will rule. You'll have dominion over the masses. That's exactly what the Republican conservatives want in this country. They want dominion, absolute dominion over you, over me, over the middle class, over the lower socioeconomic class, even the upper class if they can have their way, okay? They want absolute dominion over us, and we will have none of that, okay? So this is what's happening with Jeff Flake, who's running for Senate here in Arizona. I kid you not, he wants to repeal the 17th Amendment. He wants to, instead of having senators directly elected, okay, two senators per state, I think it's a great idea, they want state legislatures to directly elect those senators and bypass you, the people. I'm not making this up. You can look at it on the internet. Google Jeff Flake and Google 17th Amendment, and you will see.
Just Google crazy Arizona politics.
Yeah, well, if you Google crazy Arizona politics, it's because we are at the epicenter, the eye of the storm of crazy conservative politics here, and that's another topic for another day. But this is what I'm telling you, is that they don't believe in liberty. They don't believe in freedom. They talk about individualism. How does that celebrate freedom, liberty, and individualism when you are saying to the people, guess what? You're too stupid to vote for a United States senator. We don't trust you to vote for the United States senators. We want to empower our conservative state legislators who want to, quite frankly, secede from the union, okay, because that's what they wanted to do here in Arizona. We had a guy named Russell Pierce who was the state senator here in Arizona, the kookiest guy that you can ever imagine running a state senate, okay, and he had an iron grip, just like the Politburo, just like Communist Russia, over all of his comrades, okay, down at the state capitol, and they followed in lockstep whatever Russell Pierce wanted to do. Okay, they did. And one of the things was he wanted to create this sort of 12-member group and have a quorum of 12 that would allow Arizona to ignore any federal laws that they didn't deem constitutional in their eyes. So, in other words, what the state senators and the state representatives here in Arizona could do is say to the federal government, basically, screw you. Screw you. We're not going to obey your rules. We're not going to obey your laws. We're going to do what we think is right. And we're our own state, and that's the way we're going to operate. And these are the people who tell you that they are for the rule of law, that, you know, draw a line in the sand. What don't you understand about legal? But yet they feel it's, once they're in power and they get those levers of power, they can do whatever they want. And that's simply what a conservative Republican is all about. Okay, that's what the Republican Party has become. Denying individual liberty, denying individual freedom, and basically concentrating power amongst very, very small groups of people. Look, 57 minutes after the hour right now, we'll be back at the top with more of the Tom Hartman Show. Lots of people on the Freedom Lines right now. Stay with us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back. 6 minutes currently after the hour, my friends. This is the good Dr. Mike Newcomb broadcasting live from 1480 KPHX here in Phoenix, Arizona, and substituting for Tom today and tomorrow, my friends. So we have the Freedom Lines lit up right now. If you want to participate in the program, feel free to do so. 1-866-987-TOM. That's T-H-O-M. 1-866-987-8466. Let's clean up some of these calls. Let's get to the callers. They've been very patient here, Eric. Holding. And
I know. I mean, the board was packed from the get-go, wasn't it?
Yeah. God bless them. All right. Well, let's go. Let's see. You got Tina listening via Sirius XM. She's in Bradenton. Is that my eyes? I don't have my glasses. My readers
again,
are.
Again, Mike. Again.
Yes. Bradenton. Bradenton. She'll tell us what it is. She wants to talk about Medicare not going broke. Welcome, Tina.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Now, how do you say your city? I have really bad, poor eyesight right now.
It's Bradenton.
All right, Bradenton. I thought I was correct. Okay, great. Yeah, so you wanted to talk about Medicare and maybe not going broke.
Yes, I'm just very, very, very upset about all the information, leading information about Medicare from the Republican Party or conservative, whatever you want to call them these days. And I'm getting sick and tired of them telling everybody that Medicare is going broke and all those stupid mess they want to come up with. Because I'm trying to figure out something. If Medicare is going broke, why every time someone receives a paycheck, if they're an independent contractor, if they don't taxes, Medicare is taken out of your paycheck. So you, that
right.
And Social Security. So I wish they would stop lying on everything. And also with the Ryan budget, if he was to pass, God forbid, if they get elected to the White House, people seem to forget 55 and under will be affected, but Romney wants to appeal the Obamacare Act, which means pre-existing comes into play. So we
right.
all know that individuals who have pre-existing conditions trying to find insurance, this is going to be a total mess.
Tina, I agree with you. Look, I'm a physician, and I agree 100% with what you're saying. I applaud the president for making sure that as part of the Affordable Care Act, that people who had pre-existing conditions, which is a lot of people, Tina, I mean, we're not talking just about a small percentage of people. Almost everybody in this country, quite frankly, at some point in their life is going to have some condition, whether it's diabetes, whether it's high blood pressure, whether it's a stroke, whether it's depression. I mean, there's lots of medical illnesses out there. So the president finally said, look, enough is enough. Stop capitalizing on people's misery and their suffering in order for you to make a profit. He said, if you want to be in the insurance business, then you need to cover all of God's children. You don't just cover God's healthy children. On the contrary, Jesus would be quite upset with modern-day Republicans and conservatives, Tina, because Jesus, could you imagine Jesus, think of this, think of Jesus in Galilee going down the street with the apostles, and he comes upon a leper, and rather than healing that person, he says, hey, Paul, Luke, why don't you collect the copay here? Does that guy got an insurance card? How much does he owe me? Because if he doesn't pay me the money, I'm not gonna cure the blind guy. I'm not gonna, you know, raise Lazarus from the dead, because Lazarus, he's been, you know,
he's too sick.
Yeah, he's too sick. I can't help him. Could you imagine Jesus doing that, Tina?
What you just said, and I'm gonna hang up with a lot of calls waiting. When you mention the word Jesus, that, you know, every time they say they're Christians, I wanna smack them in the face. Because if
yeah.
Jesus was here, he was, first of all, he was poor, he had no money, he had nothing. So they wouldn't even listen to him. They'll call him a kook and put him in an institution. So that's into that right there. So they wouldn't even, and it angers me they use him like that as well. Go ahead.
I agree, Tina. Well, listen, get back to doing what you're doing. I appreciate your call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let me just shut that off. That's my alarm. That's my actual... siesta alarm for my nap. I forgot to inactivate it, Eric.
Well, you should do that before.
I should do that. But look, I agree with Tina. I mean, this the way that they use Jesus, Eric, is absolutely absurd. I mean, absolutely absurd how they try to say that they are Christians, and in reality, they do the opposite. Because you could never imagine Jesus saying that, could
no,
you?
No, of course not. I mean, Jesus didn't go around going, now, that guy's too sick. Sorry.
Right.
Was the reason he would heal them was because
he would
sick.
Never have become Jesus,
right.
You know, if he couldn't do that, right? Because then everybody, if they didn't have a pre-existing condition, Jesus would have never been able to perform a miracle, would he? How could Jesus perform a miracle on the guy with good cholesterol, no diabetes, and perfect eyesight?
Well, he changed water into wine.
Right, but I'm saying as far as healing the sick,
right,
I mean,
as far as healing the sick.
You know, he would have to have people.
And weren't the insurance companies trying to get pregnancy as a pre-existing condition?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's crazy.
Well, because, see, that's my whole point. Anything that an insurance company has to pay for, to them, that's money from their bottom line. That's profit that they ultimately are not going to get or get less of. So that's why they want to make sure in a private insurance company that they limit as many services as possible. And if they're not successful in limiting those services, they have another tactic that they use. That's called increase your premiums.
Right.
You know, jack up the price. Hey, if we didn't make enough money off your misery and suffering last year, guess what we're going to do this year? We're going to make you suffer more in the pocketbook, okay?
Meanwhile, the CEOs are pocketing millions and millions.
Tens and hundreds of millions. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous what healthcare CEOs make versus, you know, people who are in healthcare. You know, even doctors. I mean, if you think doctors make a lot of money, healthcare CEOs make way more money than doctors.
Oh,
way
yeah.
more. And they do nothing, absolutely nothing, to care for the patients. All they do, they're paper pushers. They push paper around, and they try to figure out how to limit care, how the money that you pay in, you pay money into a benefit, right? You pay your premiums. And basically, those premiums, just think of it in a big glass of a gallon of milk. So say you got a gallon of milk, and that represents your premiums, okay? Well, this is the way it works. It's very visual, very easy. You got the gallon of milk, right? Okay, how many quarts are in a gallon? Four, right?
Yes. I believe so, yes.
All right, so here's a good example, because about 25% of your premium dollars historically have been skimmed off the top, and they go directly to the CEO, the chief financial officer, the upper management, you know, the people on the inside, the board members, the people who are really, you know, at the upper top. So they take a quart of that gallon of milk and pour it right out into their account, Eric. Okay, so now you only have 3/4 of a gallon of milk left to handle the health care, right? Well, now what they say is, well, boy, we still got shareholders, you know, the people who were silly enough to invest money in our companies and that we duped into thinking that, you know, this is a good deal. You know, we still got to give them some dividends. You want to talk about a Ponzi scheme. So we have to figure out a way for them to get, you know, a return on their investment. So that means that the 75% of the milk that's left, you got to make sure that as little as that milk goes out as possible. So if a little bit of that milk's going to go out, you know what that means? That means you, the beneficiary, are not going to get the benefits that you were guaranteed as part of the insurance product. Because if you get really sick, okay, and now they have to put another cup of milk out of there, or another quart of milk. They're going to be, holy cow, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to lose money. I mean, we're in this to make money. So they're going to figure out ways to deny you the care that you need as a patient. Make no mistake about it. That's how private insurance works. I'm not saying that private insurance should be banned. I'm not saying that private insurance is evil.
Or that they can't make a profit.
Or that they can't make a profit. I'm just telling you, though, that their motivating force, the reason that they're in business, is not to keep you well. It's not to keep you healthy. It's not to keep you happy. It's to keep, first and foremost, themselves very rich at the upper top because they skim the 25% off, and then to make sure that as little of that milk goes out as possible. And then if at the end of the year they say, you know what, we only got a quart of milk left, and that's a 25% profit, which, you know, you think would be a good profit, and they'll say, guess what, that's not good enough. That's not good enough. We want higher profits. So guess what they're going to do? They're going to take your money now, increase your premiums, and that premium increase is going to represent maybe another quart of milk. They're going to pour it back in, so now that they're at a 50% level versus a 25% level. So they never lose. You see what I'm saying? They never lose. And this is what Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan want to do. They want to privatize that, put all the milk into, you know, the private sector, take it away from the government, and then basically screw you. In essence, that's look, I'm just being honest with you. We'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman Show. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in. Stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 20 minutes after the hour, Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting here live from Phoenix, Arizona, 1480 KPHX for the good Tom Hartman. My friends, I'll be in here tomorrow as well. So we appreciate everybody tuning in today and participating in the program. I'm going to get to the Freedom Lines here in a second. I know we got a lot of callers and a lot of people have been very patient, so just stick with me. I'll get to you guys, and I'm very excited to talk to you. But I want to play this clip, Eric. This is a clip that you and I have played on our local show in the past, and I don't know if you remember this one. It's with the GOP, the primary debate. Remember when they were talking about the guy who didn't necessarily have insurance and he got into a really bad car accident and, you know, kind of what do you do with that guy? You know, and then the GOP audience
Yes,
said, let him die.
Yeah, how could
do you remember that?
Yeah, of course. How could you forget that?
How could you, as just a human being, you know, forget about Democrat or Republican or conservative or liberal. As a human being, if you know somebody is suffering, if you know somebody is ill, if you know that if they don't get health care, okay, regardless if they had insurance or not insurance, they opted not to do it. You know, as a doctor, I can never imagine myself in a position where I had somebody on a gurney whose eyes were basically, you know, going up into the top of their head and their face was turning blue and they stopped breathing.
Let him die.
Yeah, let him die. Don't worry about it. That's his problem. He decided never to get health insurance.
Yeah, it's his fault. He can't afford health insurance.
Right, exactly. And talk about, you know, never judging. I mean, I thought as a Christian nation, we're not supposed to judge people, Eric. I thought, you know, that's up to the Lord to judge. But yet, I'll tell you, these conservative Republicans, they're very quick to judge people, you know, and without even a fair trial, you know, just to impugn someone's character and just say, let them die. So let me just play you this clip, because this is basically the Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney supporters. And if this is a philosophy that you believe in, if this is something that you subscribe to, then guess what? They're your men. They're your guys. They're your go-to guys. But if this reviles you, if this makes you want to throw up, if this basically strikes at your core in a very visceral way and says, God Almighty, help us. Why are there people like that? Then guess what? President Obama is your man. Okay, so let's play this clip. Are you ready, Eric?
Yep.
Let's go to the tape. Oh, you guys are not getting this? Okay. We'll have to go back to this because right now we're not getting that on the air.
Yeah, right. We'll take care of it during the break.
But let's go to the Freedom Lines, okay, because we have plenty of people who want to hear this. But I definitely want you guys to hear that clip, and we will get it technically set up for you. So let's go. First in the queue here is a voucher system question from John. He's listening on Sirius XM. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been just trying to figure this out. If an older person, 80, 85, 90, who's having Alzheimer's or other problems, forgets to put in their voucher or doesn't have time, he's in the hospital or something else, what happens? Does he still go to the hospital and get taken care of and come on to our money anyway?
Now, what was that again?
We're going to pay.
Yeah, wait, say that again. What was that again, John?
If a person who's in retirement getting the vouchers that they're trying to do the Ryan plan,
right.
What if they don't get time to put it in? What if they're in the hospital? What if they're incapacitated and can't pay for it or can't go out shopping, as the case may be? Are
right.
they out of luck?
Well, I guess what they're going to tell them at that point is that it's your financial burden then. You know, you decided not to get the voucher, and therefore you only get a certain percentage of your care covered, and you're screwed, basically.
If they've got Alzheimer's and don't remember, is it their fault? They've got a pre-existing problem. They can't remember. I mean, there's a million reasons why we take care of our older citizens.
I think it's a great point, John, because you're right. As a physician, and I'm a geriatric physician, I deal with a lot of people who are elderly and who have those sort of neurodegenerative diseases that you're talking about, Alzheimer's, where their cognition is impaired. They can't make necessarily the best decisions that they did prior to having the disease. So you're right. I mean, under the Medicare system right now, it's a guaranteed benefit. Once you turn 65, you don't have to worry about cutting coupons out and premium support and vouchers and this and that. If you get sick,
and
guess
shopping.
What? Why would you be
shopping at 95 years old?
Well, that's what they want you to do. They want you to go through all these exchanges and this and that and private companies. Look, it's all a ruse, John. It's all a ruse. All they want to do is they know that healthcare right now, I don't know if you know this, it is the largest segment of our economy. It's way bigger than the military. Healthcare is about 16% of our gross domestic product. It is the single most, it is the largest segment of our economy. So you don't think that Romney and Ryan and all of their crony capitalists want to get their filthy hands on the largest segment of the American economy and basically put those hands into the cookie jar and take that revenue and take it out of the government's hands and stuff it into the pockets of the private sector? So what they'll do is they speak with forked tongues. They are serpents. They will try to lie to you and tell you that privately run health insurance, privately run Medicare is superior to the government-run system. It offers more choice. There's better outcomes. And it's an outright lie. I'm telling you. I know this. I practice medicine.
My mom shopping. I don't want my mom making those decisions. I don't want my mother or grandmother or any of them out into a system where it could fail on them.
Hey, John, I agree with you. That's what I was saying earlier in the program.
Right.
Could you imagine your mother or grandmom, you know, basically saying, hey, John, you know, I need to get heart surgery right now, but my premium support voucher only covers 25% of it. You know, what do you do then? Have a bake sale? You go out and you try to raise money in the community?
I'm disgusted by the donut hole, that there's even a donut hole that they can't get taken care of for 3 or 4 months a year.
Right. Well, that's being closed under the Affordable Care Act. I don't know if you know this, but that donut hole will be closed, and so they won't have that exposure. Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
I can't even tell you how much when I look at it to see my father-in-law is in it right now, and he can't get his depression medicine, and we're dealing with him. And I appreciate it, but I'd rather him be taken care of.
Well, it's on the way. As long as Obama can continue with his legacy and continue to revolutionize and change healthcare in this country in a beneficial way, it's going to happen. Listen, John, I got to run. I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, it's John from Rochester, New York, my friends. Okay, it is 27 minutes after the hour. We still got a lot of callers on the line right now. 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M, 1-866-987-8466. And hopefully when we get back, we'll have that audio available for you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Okay, welcome back. 34 minutes after the hour, Mike Newcomb sitting in here for Tom Hartman, my friends, today and tomorrow. And we appreciate everybody phoning in on the Freedom Lines right now. And be patient. I'm going to get to you. But I want to play this audio. We are able to do it now. Correct, Eric?
Yeah, everything's good.
All right, let's do it. Let's listen to our fellow citizens, our fellow brothers and sisters, our fellow patriots. And they are known as conservative Republicans. Let's listen and hear what they think about somebody who is critically ill and potentially could die if they don't get the proper health care that they need. Okay, so let's go to the tape.
Before I get to Michelle Bachman, I want to just, you're a physician, Ron Paul, so you're a doctor. You know something about this subject. Let me ask you this hypothetical question. A healthy 30-year-old young man has a good job, makes a good living, but decides, you know what, I'm not going to spend $200 or $300 a month for health insurance because I'm healthy, I don't need it. But, you know, something terrible happens, all of a sudden he needs it. Who's going to pay for if he goes into a coma, for example? Who pays for that?
In a society that you accept welfarism and socialism, he expects the government to take care of
him. What do you want?
But what he should do is whatever he wants to do and assume responsibility for himself. My advice to him would have a major medical policy, but not before.
But he doesn't have that. He doesn't have it, and he needs intensive care for 6 months. Who pays?
That's what freedom is all about, taking your own risk. This whole idea that you have to prepare and take care of everybody.
Listen to the sheeple.
But, Congressman, are you saying the society should just let him die?
No.
Look at that. Should society just let him die, Eric? And then you hear the audience, yeah, let him die. It's despicable. I mean, again, not conservatism. They're con artists. Not conservatives. They're con artists. They tell you they're for Jesus. They're about Jesus. They're about compassion, about love. Is that what is compassionate about that? About a guy who has no insurance in a terrible car accident, who's on the verge of dying in a coma, and if he doesn't get health care, and you have Wolf Blitzer put it directly to the candidate, Ron Paul, and ask him, do you just let him die? And then the audience just gets crazy and says, yeah, let him die. That's the difference in this election, okay? That is, without question, the difference between President Barack Obama and Joe Biden and Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Make no mistakes about it. Because Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan would say, yeah, let him die. That's his problem. He opted not to have insurance. And look, we don't know why. Again, why are you judging this man? You don't know why he opted not to have insurance.
There's a difference between opting not to have insurance and not being able to afford it.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But you see the people who want to cast stones very quickly say let him die versus they don't know what happened. Maybe this guy's mother was in a car accident years ago, and he's working 2-3 jobs to pay for his mother's care. Maybe he's got a spouse at home who's handicapped. Maybe he's got a child who has a genetic illness who he's trying to put through therapies. You don't know that. But you see, this is the knee-jerk reflex of modern-day conservatives. It's about selfishness. Make no mistake about it. It's about the ego. It's about me, and they can give two craps about you or your loved ones, or your fellow patriots, okay? And look, I will play you clips, too, either today or tomorrow, from Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan is a devotee. He loves this lady named Ayn Rand. I know about Ayn Rand because I actually read some of her material. I read some of her books, and I actually did a paper on Ayn Rand in college at NYU. I was a philosophy major. I also studied the prerequisites for medicine, but I always loved philosophy, philosophical inquiry and discourse and metaphysics and you name it. I used to like the Greek philosophers the most because they were the simplest ones, but they made the most sense. But in any case, I wrote a paper on that. It wasn't a thesis. It was a paper. It was on her The Virtue of Selfishness, okay, the book that she wrote, and that is one of the tomes that Paul Ryan adamantly believes in. He says he gives it to all of his interns for mandatory reading when they come to Congress, and it's all about selfishness. And I have never heard in my entire life a political leader embracing the concept of selfishness as a virtue. As a virtue. I mean, think about that. And this is what's become the Republican Party. This is what's become the conservative movement. It is about selfishness. It is about only you, only me. And I completely disavow and disagree with looking at life like that. We are all in this together. Make no mistake about it. No man, no woman is an island unto his or herself. None. Okay? It doesn't work that way. Just like the human body. Okay? As a doctor, I can tell you, got lungs, you got kidneys, you got a heart, you got a brain. But in the conservative world, the brain would say, it's all about me. Or the heart would say, it's all about me. And let me tell you something. when one organ in your body takes over at the expense of the other organs in your body, do you know what happens? Death, disease, illness. The body can't function like that. If you want to talk about the ultimate team player, it's the human body. The human body works in such a flawless, seamless manner together, working in concert, together as a team, collectively. Yes, yes, the human body, the human being, is a collectivist organism, whether you realize it or not. You'll hear Paul Ryan and you'll hear libertarians and conservatives talking about collectivism, collectivism. Collectivism's a good thing. When things work together, it's a great thing. When the American people work together, it's a great thing. When the Olympic team works together, it's a great thing. Okay? You don't win championships in the relay races because individuals decided to act on their own, irrespective of what's happening as a team. A soccer team doesn't win a championship. The women's team in soccer at the Olympics didn't win a gold medal because every individual decided to act selfishly for themselves because each individual tried to score the most goals and to get the most glory. No. On the contrary, those people work together as collectivists, as a team, with the common goal being a gold medal.
Victory.
Victory for all at the end. That is a fundamental difference, between conservative and liberal ideology. And it strikes at the very core of who we are as people, of who we are as human beings. It is a gift, it is a miracle to be here, to be alive. Everybody is a gold medal winner. But the bottom line is we have to work together because the human species has evolved and achieved greatness, yes, on the work of individual creative minds. There's no question about that. There are many individuals who have achieved greatness, who have seen things that other people haven't seen, come up with ideas, new innovative ways to do things. And we all love that. No one is against that. I admire that. There are many individuals who are my heroes. Albert Einstein, to name one. Jesus Christ, to name another. My mom and dad, to name two others. But you take from each of those individuals their greatness and you try to incorporate it into your own life and then create a greater good for other people. Okay? See, the conservative would be much happier if they had all these trophies for the best player and the MVP and sitting in their own room with their legs kicked up in their bed, you know, smoking a little cigar and going, look at how great I am. Look at me. I'm great. I'm a great individual. A great achievement. Versus the liberal would like to sit in that bedroom and see all those trophies, but those trophies are from team championships. Look, when I was in the Little League, I played Little League baseball. I was a fierce competitor, okay? I don't come from wealth. I don't come from a lot of money, okay? My parents were poor when they were younger. They were on welfare. We did get they got federal subsidies, housing subsidies, food stamps at one point. But guess what? I knew that the government was giving my mom and dad and my family a hand up. Not a handout, a hand up. And I was always raised in a very liberal household that you earn your living. You earn what you have to do. I worked hard studying when I was in grade school and high school and college. Nobody did anything for me. I understand what it means to work hard as an individual, to get a college degree, to get a medical degree. I understand that. And I worked hard and I got loans and I paid for my, and I paid my way. Okay. I paid off all of my student loans, but it took me 15 years to do that. So this bull crap that you hear from conservatives that liberals are fat and lazy and welfare mamas is complete bull crap. We work just as hard as anybody else out there, and we achieve. But the difference is, getting back to that analogy in the bedroom and the trophies, I would much rather sit in my bedroom and see those trophies as team trophies, that my Little League baseball team, we won the championship, okay? I would much rather be there rather than as an individual saying, oh, I was the best all-around gymnast, which is great. But I would, to me, I would much rather see the team championship, okay? Like the United States gymnast, our girls, who were the best team out there. And I would guarantee you that the majority of those individuals would tell you it's so much more satisfying personally to win a championship than to be the most valuable player. You ask any sports player today professionally and ask them what's most important about their sports career, because I love sports. I absolutely love sports. You ask any professional, and I would almost guarantee you they'll tell you it's about championships. It's about winning as a team. Okay? It's about the ring, the Super Bowl ring. It's about winning in basketball. It's about the World Series. I will guarantee you, overwhelmingly, those people cherish the collectivist approach, the team approach, versus the selfish individual approach. 45 minutes after the hour, back with more of the Tom Hartman Show in a moment. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Okay, welcome back. 50 minutes currently after the hour here. We are going to get to the Freedom Lines right now, but before we do that, we do have a daily news update with Ellen Ratner from Talk Radio's News Service, so let's get right to that before we get to the other callers on the Freedom Lines. Let me get Ellen on the line right here. Ellen, how are you today?
Well, it's good you have some callers because there's not a whole lot going on right now, but I think the most interesting thing in Washington, and it's very sad, some gunmen tried to get into the Family Research Council. As you know, they're very, very conservative, in my view, anti-gay group. He had apparently some high-capacity magazine. He had a Chick-fil-A bag with him. The FBI said that they don't know much about him. They have him in custody. He shot a security guard who wrestled him to the ground, apparently even after he was shot. And they consider this an example of domestic terrorism.
Sure.
And there's also, by the way, there's you know, Africa in many respects it can be a very tough area, both for people who live there and for others. But now, according to the AP, a four-star army general, he was the U.S. Africa Command. He's under investigation for spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on travel, hotel, etc. General Whip William Kip Ward, and apparently he's been under investigation for about a year and a half, and they're saying, you know, somewhere between $500 and $1 million has been spent down. He stepped down early last year, but now they're releasing this information.
Interesting.
Some other news going on. It looks like an unmanned aircraft designed to fly six times the speed of sound went down in the Pacific. Also, it looks like that the Romney bounce, which was expected after naming Ryan his vice president, did not happen. So he's still, according to popular, he's still ahead of Obama, but of course this is not a popular vote. It's a state by state vote, and that's where there is some real problems. Also, today, President Obama in Iowa did push against, he was in Dubuque, Iowa. This was his third day in Iowa, although he came back to the White House last night, and he said he has strengthened Medicare. As you know, the Romney campaign is trying to hit him on Medicare, and he said that he is going to try and extend Medicare by a decade, and he said that the Ryan Romney plan would end Medicare as we know it. So that's a quick one for you.
All right, well, Ellen, we always appreciate it, and thank you for that daily news update, and we look forward to that tomorrow.
Thank you.
All right, have a great day. Okay, that's Ellen Ratner. Okay, and let's get to the Freedom Lines right now at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's go first to Chuck on the line from Rio Rico, California, holding patiently, wants to talk to us about Will Rogers and a quote from the 30s. Welcome there, Chuck.
Hey.
How are you?
Good, and yourself?
I'm doing well.
Well, it's actually Rio Rico, Arizona.
Oh, they put California.
Well,
I like Rio Rico, Arizona. You got a great resort down there.
Yeah, it's all right, but they sold the golf course out to privately, and it used to be a PGA deal to get into the regular PGA Tour, you know, a qualifying deal. But
yeah, it sounds like something
Rogers,
that Paul Ryan was up to, privatizing golf courses now, too.
Yeah. Well, it, Will Rogers said it back in the 30s. He says, you want to know what's wrong with America? He said, there's too many Democrats, too many Republicans, and not enough Americans.
Hmm. Well,
and
that's
probably more true today than it was back then.
Well, look, it's an interesting way to look at it.
Each party, less so the Democrats, but a lot of them play to their extreme ends. Republicans do a lot more than the Democrats.
The Republicans own that. I have to tell you there, Chuck, the Republicans totally cater to the extremist elements of their party. Not only do they cater to it, they now have a vice presidential nominee who represents the most extreme
ideology. Oh, I know that.
Ideology.
I thought, you know, Romney would pick someone more like Pawlenty.
Yeah.
You know, someone who could at least try to reach some middle ground with the Democrats.
Well, they don't want middle ground. They've drawn the line in the sand.
With Ryan, there is no way he's ever going to try to reach any middle ground.
Nope. It's going to be their way or the highway, come hell or high water. Hey, listen, I appreciate that quote from Will Rogers, so thanks a lot, Chuck, okay?
Hold on. I got one more deal. Can you hang on?
All right, yeah, go ahead.
It's about labor unions.
Uh-huh.
And I would not be alive today if it wasn't for my dad being in a strong labor union.
Sure.
My dad was a UAW worker. And I would not be alive today because of his health insurance through the labor union.
Sure. Absolutely. They got you a better benefit, and they advocated on behalf of your interest. And you would think that conservative Republicans would admire that, where you got somebody working to get you as an individual a better deal, a better benefit. But obviously they place more value on the corporation and the business than they do in the individual, because if they really believed in the individual, they would be all for unions, because unions actually represent the interest of individuals, not necessarily the converse. So, all right, listen, I appreciate that for sure, Chuck, and I totally embrace your union love, because I come from a union household. My father was a union member for 43 years, very active in the union, as was my mother, but my father more so. But I grew up in a union household, and I saw the same thing you saw. I saw that my parents got a good wage. They got good time off. They got good benefits. They were able to spend time with their children after school, going to baseball games, little league games, you know, dance recitals. The union afforded the nuclear family the opportunity to really stay together. But on the contrary, you look at Romney and you look at Ryan, they're looking to destroy the nuclear family as we know it. Listen, when we get back here, I know we still got Danny. He's been holding for quite some time from Dubuque, Iowa, a bunch of other people as well. I'll get to your calls. Just stay with us. It's 57 minutes after the hour. This is Mike Newcomb sitting in live for Tom Hartman. And if you need to contact me via email, just give me a shout out at mike@mikenewcomb.net.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back. 6 minutes currently after the hour. Hour number three here right now as the good Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting here live for Tom Hartman today. We are broadcasting from our flagship station here locally in Phoenix, the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480KPHX.com. And Tom is broadcast on this particular station 2-3 hours every day, so we're very proud to have Tom as part of our lineup. And if you want to learn a little bit more about us locally, you can just check us out on the web at 1480kphx.com.
And don't forget our Facebook page.
Yes, we do have a Facebook page, too, that you can hyperlink to there, our official Facebook page. So Also, the Freedom Lines are still open. We still got a lot of people to get to your calls here, so stay patient at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466. But before we do that, we do have a special guest on the line. His name is Ron Bailey, and Ron is the science correspondent for Reason Magazine at Reason.com. Also, the author of Liberation Biology, The Moral and Scientific Case for the Biotech Revolution. So, without further ado, let's get to our esteemed guest. How are you doing there, Ron?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. Good. Well, it's great to have you here today, Ron. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about that book. It sounds kind of interesting. I haven't read it, but the title, I'm a physician, a practicing physician, internal medicine doc here in Phoenix, and it looks kind of interesting. What is it all about?
Well, the basic premise is that it's twofold. One is that medical biotechnology is likely to dramatically extend human lifespan sometime later in this century, and what we need to do is to allow that to go forward. There are a lot of bioethicists who are somewhat dim on that and are trying to prevent it in various ways, and I'm arguing that's the moral case. And also I'm looking at genetically modified crops and why that should go forward as well, because it's good for the consumers, the environment, and farmers as well.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. Now, why, as a doctor, why would anyone be against expanding the life expectancy? I mean, that seems kind of a no-brainer to me.
I would think it would be, too, but some bioethicists are very concerned about it in the sense that they are afraid that by radically extending it, we would create all kinds of problems that would need to be addressed. Perhaps overpopulation would be one of their concerns that they have. Another is that they're afraid that what we would end up is a nursing home world, and the argument actually is, the researchers I talk to and the research I look at, is the point is not to make people older longer, it's the point is to make them younger longer. And
right.
I think that that's where the research is going.
No doubt about it. Hey, it would give my kids more opportunity to get their homework done.
Indeed.
If they can live as long. No, but it's interesting you talk about that, because if you really think about that concept of not just expanding the life expectancy, but actually keeping the youthfulness, because one of the things, you know, and I talked to some of my colleagues about is, and you're aware of this, I'm sure, through your research, is that where you can now actually take somebody's own cells and then regenerate certain tissues that are exact matches of those tissues, and then ultimately repair, say, for instance, if you had a heart attack, a myocardial infarction, and you get scarred tissue in your heart, which prevents the heart from pumping effectively, you could take those cultured cells, grow somebody's myocardium, and then literally stitch it back in. There'll be no rejection because it's not a transplant from somebody with a different genetic makeup. And in essence, I know I'm oversimplifying this, but you almost got like a new heart.
Right, exactly. Of course, some of the other stuff that I look at are the concerns that people had about embryonic stem cell research, for example. I'm making an argument that we should be allowed to go forward with that as well, whereby you could take really renewed cells from embryos and essentially manipulate the tissues into making very youthful replacements for damaged organs and tissues as well.
Right, right. And that concept is the pluripotential cell that has the ability to differentiate into all the respective cell lines. And look, I think it's fascinating research. It's, you know, the molecular world, and it's almost like a whole universe into itself, isn't it, Ron, at the small level?
Yes. And again, I think that this is the kind of stuff that we really need to allow to go forward and not overregulate, if you would.
No, I would agree 100% with you as well. Now, Ron, tell us a little bit to our audience about Reason.com and what that website's about and what the content on the site is.
Sure. Reason.com is basically, as all we're a policy magazine, and all policy magazines have a point of view, and we're kind of in that same universe of magazines as the New Republic or Commentary or the National Review and so forth. And our point of view is generally described as libertarian, which in the current political context I'd like to argue is that we're not for either Team Red or Team Blue. We're basically trying to figure out how to use free markets to enhance Americans and other people's lives. And we believe that that's the way to go, and that the heavy hand of government is probably not the way to improve people's lives in general.
Interesting. Well, let me ask you this, just as a philosophical. I was also a philosophy major back at NYU in the day. So what is the – because in my mind's eye, I think the best –
By the way, I was a philosophy major too.
Oh, all right. Well, there we are, fellow philosophers. Boy, we're really going to bore the audience now. But in any case, You know, what is this antipathy against the government, though? Because it's not as though the government is composed of sort of alien-like individuals who are not part of the human species. They happen to live amongst us. They're our fellow brothers and sisters. They're bright people. They're intelligent people. I mean, why this artificial distinction between what a free market can do versus what a government can do? Why can't the two work together?
Well, yes, indeed, in a certain way they can work together. The role of government is to set the rules of the game and allow market participants then to figure out what's best for themselves, not tell people what's best for themselves. And the problem is that a lot of what's going on now is top-down decisions being made by bureaucrats on behalf of people. Now, I'm sure that they think that they're doing it for their own good, but I would argue that largely they're missing, and in fact, not helping people make the best decisions possible about their lives because they simply don't know what those right decisions should be. By the way, would you be nearly as nice about corporations? After all, people who work for corporations are your fellow citizens
sure.
as well and so forth. And well, I, you know, there's
absolutely
a,
I would
a
be.
Tendency to demonize corporations as far as I can tell as well.
I don't think that's the case. I think what people demonize, quite frankly, Ron, is the fact that and the premise that you mentioned earlier, which I think is sacrosanct, is that there should be a fair level playing field with rules and regulations that everyone is held accountable to, both governments and both corporations. But what I see in modern-day capitalism, and I look, I like capitalism. I'm a physician. I'm an entrepreneur. I have my own business. I mean, I'm not antithetical to corporations by any means. But what I don't like is that when corporations coddle up with governments and legislators and whatnot, and then basically reset those rules and regulations so that they are disproportionately favoring the corporations versus, you know, the little guys out there trying to compete. Look, it's like I like sports. I like boxing.
By the way, I 100% agree with you. There's nothing that I disagree with in that statement, just as you said it. You're absolutely right. The problem is the government is so powerful and so important and takes so much a percentage of the economy and is so much involved with every decision that we make that it's impossible for crony capitalism not to exist. And therefore, the argument that I and my colleagues would make at Reason is that we have to make the government smaller, less intrusive into people's lives in order to get rid of exactly the kind of horrors of crony capitalism that you're describing.
Right. But, I mean, I guess what I'm asking you is that what's the difference of the size of government? I mean, I think that to me is somewhat of a fallacious argument in the sense that it shouldn't matter what the size of anything is. It should just matter whether or not the thing works or not. I mean,
no,
if it works.
If the government takes 30% of the economy. Here, I unfortunately live in and around D.C., mm-hmm. And here, let me give you just an example of something I think would resonate with your listeners. The counties with the highest average per capita income in America today are Fairfax County, Virginia, and Montgomery County, Virginia. They are also the counties nearest to Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is absorbing more and more of the economy, and that's what the problem is. Crony capitalism.
All right, do me a favor, Ron, hold on a second. I'm going to be right back. We'll do more of the interview. I got to go to a break, so stay with us, okay? 15 minutes after the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back here. 20 minutes currently after the hour. The good doctor here, Mike Newcomb, broadcasting 1480 KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona, substituting for Tom Hartman today and tomorrow. So we welcome everybody to the table. We're on the line right now with Ron Bailey, who is a science correspondent for Reason Magazine, and we're having a robust discussion about the proper role of government versus private enterprise in the American system. So, Ron, welcome back to the table.
Delighted to be with you.
Good. So anyway, we were talking prior to that about the fact that you have an issue with the government controlling X percent of perhaps, say, the GDP or
right.
the revenue stream in this country, that you think it would be better allocated or better invested, if you will, in the hands of the private sector, correct?
That's broadly generally correct, yes.
Yes, in general. So let's explore that a little bit because I want the listeners to kind of understand and the sort of libertarian bent on this. Why is it that you think that if somehow or another the private sector is in control of things, that the outcomes will be better versus if the government is somehow involved? I mean, I know of no study or any type of intellectual exercise that has proven conclusively that the private sector is far superior in its execution of its duties than is an American government, for instance.
Actually, there are tons of studies like that, and I direct you and your listeners to a branch of economic, if you will, analysis called public choice theory, which looks at how government behaves with regard to incentives and how the private sector does. The difference is with government is very often these decisions are win-lose decisions. When they're politicized, basically one side loses and somebody wins. And so you end up with people being very dissatisfied, the losers in this case. Whereas in market decisions, it's a much more plurality system. You get to vote with your dollars. If I happen to like this house over that house, I get to buy that house. I don't have to go to live in a particular place where someone tells me to go. Or I can buy this bar of soap or this car if I prefer. And so basically what you end up with in your interactions in private enterprise at a very basic level is win-win. I get something and the seller gets something, and we both walk away pretty happy. And so the way to think about it is how do you feel when you're treated as a customer versus being treated as a client, as they refer to you, when you go to government services? I think that most people feel better as customers than they do as clients, which is not to say that there are not some agencies that work fairly well most of the time. It's just in general what you find is the private market satisfies people's wants with greater alacrity and cheaper than the government can do.
Okay, well, and I obviously respectfully disagree with that. So let's give an example. Okay, let's talk about that, because we have the Affordable Care Act with President Barack Obama, which I think is a phenomenal piece of landmark legislation, and I think this act in and of itself actually is able to deliver healthcare services in this country much more efficiently than the private market could do on its own. And so let's explore that. So for instance, let's say you got a healthcare company, right? You got a government-run system like Medicare, and let's say you now have the private enterprise, whatever, Company X, call it, whether it's Humanis, who knows. You got a private corporation for healthcare. What is the respective goals from your perspective, Ron, from the private sector running the healthcare system versus, say, a government-run system? What's the most important thing, would you say, for the private sector? If you're the CEO,
of course, the problem is the CEO. What I want to do is maximize my profits. Question is the way you stop CEOs from doing that is by preventing them from being monopolists. The whole point is not to defend corporations, but to defend markets. And what you need to do is have more and more people competing in the healthcare sector so that they cannot continue to raise their prices the way it happens now. The problem now, we're basically turning, we're in the process of turning health insurance companies most specifically into essentially utilities where the government simply sets their rates. There'll be no competition and we'll just get what may as well be practically single payer at that point. What I would like to see is an actual market, a national market, where you could buy health insurance from anybody who's qualified.
Including the government?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. If you want to buy Medicaid, be allowed to do that.
Objection to the public option then as a choice?
No. So long as the government does not regulate the private sector such that it will lose, and that's always the problem, and that is a concern with it. But assuming that there were, in fact, a fair market where Medicaid would be forced to compete with the private sector, then I don't see a particularly insuperable problem with that. The problem that many people worry about is if you set it up with the public option, that essentially what you'll end up doing is forcing the private sector to subsidize the lower costs of that public option, and that is a real concern.
Well, but let me ask you. So you have let's talk apples to apples here. You got a private sector run health company, okay? And I know this because I work in healthcare, and I've worked with a lot of the big, you know, Fortune 100 healthcare companies at a national level. If you look at their cost to administer healthcare, okay, actually, they're not even doing anything with healthcare. All they're doing is paper pushing. They're not doing anything with the delivery of the services. They're just a middleman. They're actually not really doing anything for the patient. So, but why does it cost them on average 20 to 25% to basically administer that benefit when you look at Medicare, and Medicare runs anywhere from 3 to 5%? I mean, your contention was that the private-run systems in a free market are much more lean and mean and efficient than a government-run system, but those numbers don't lie. 3 to 5% Medicare to administer the benefit versus 20 to 25% for a private corporation. Why the disparity?
It's extremely hard to go into. You know, we've been screwing up the medical system, regulating it.
All right, well, do me a favor, Ron. I'm on a break right now, but, you know, you have about 4 minutes to think about it. So think about it. When we get back, we'll explore that.
And I'll have a quick answer at that point.
Okay. All right. We'll be back in a moment. We're here with the Tom Hartman Show. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Welcome back. 34 minutes after the hour. I love this. This is Teenage Wasteland, right?
Baba O'Reilly.
This is what we're talking about. Waste, you know, efficiency. And that's what we're talking about right now with Ron Bailey from Reason.com. He's the science correspondent. And, Ron, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be back.
Good. So before we left off, we were talking about efficiencies and the fact of the matter that the Medicare system that I participate in as a provider is only about 3 to 5% of the dollar, cents on a dollar, I should say, to administer that benefit. But you have a private sector health insurance company that consumes about 20 to 25% of the dollar. It skims it right off the top to deliver that benefit. So I would like your frank feedback on why that the private sector clearly is not as efficient as the government sector in at least administering the benefit.
Skimming seems a bit harsh, but no, there are various ways of calculating. One of the things that the Medicare number that you're quoting fails to include, for example, is the fact that basically there's a lot of other government help to the Medicare system. For example, other agencies like the Internal Revenue Service collect the taxes that fund the program. Social Security also collects some of the premiums from beneficiaries. The Department of Health and Human Services manages the accounting and auditing. And these are things that are not included in that figure that you're talking about. And another way to slice the data is not per dollar, but per patient. And recent research by an economist named Robert Book has looked at it. If you look per patient, that is beneficiary, the private insurers spend about $453 per beneficiary on administrative costs, whereas Medicare spends $509 per beneficiary. So again,
Say those numbers.
Simple in medical economics, basically. There are various ways.
Nothing is simple.
And there are various ways to look at this, and it's highly politicized, so it's really hard to get through to what the actual facts are.
All right, well, let me ask you this. As a doctor, okay, I went to medical school, right? Nobody gave me a handout. I worked hard. I studied hard. I learned all about human pathophysiology and biology and passed all my tests, okay?
Great.
Can you justify to me why in a free market system where you have a paper pusher like a CEO at one of the major privately run health insurance companies makes, say, $100 million a year versus a doctor who might make a few hundred thousand dollars a year. Where in the market and where in capitalism is the efficiency of that? What value is that CEO in this free market capitalistic system that you're talking about? Why does that person disproportionately make, you know, exponentially more money than the actual provider of the services?
I actually don't have a good reason to say that that's a good idea. The fact is that corporate governance is broken, and it's broken not just in medical care, but throughout the economy.
But
we
my
really
question is if
look at make empowering shareholders to get a hold of those kinds of salaries, in my humble opinion. But that's not the particular issue we're talking here. If you look at the actual profitability of healthcare companies, health insurance companies, not healthcare companies, not hospital, but specifically health insurers, I just looked it up. And it's 4.5%, which is not outrageous. It's less than brewers make. It's less than auto parts stores make. It's less than a whole bunch of industries. It's about 80th or something in
right,
the list
of but you're
of
talking about 4.5.
So they're not.
But, Ron, you're talking about 4.5% of hundreds of millions and billions of dollars. So I think anybody would love to make 4.5% on billions of dollars of revenue.
Profit, don't you?
Well, no, but it
should
but that's,
auto parts stores make more profit?
Well, look, let's get back to the question here because we're getting tangential here. So my point to you was in a capitalistic system where the free market is at work, where the invisible hand of Adam Smith is, you know, just making sure that everything works out exactly the way it's supposed to work out, and yet my question was you have paper pushers at the helm of a CEO of a private insurance company making – hundreds of millions of dollars in compensation and, you know, salary and whatnot. My question is, I don't understand how that free market is working efficiently when somebody is not providing value, ultimate value, to the end client, i.e. the patient. They're not doing anything to help the patient.
The ultimate value is to their shareholders in that particular case. The point of competition should bring those salaries down. And since it isn't, I would suggest that what we need to do is to increase competition, not start setting salaries of corporate CEOs.
All right,
and
so
if you're in favor of helping me with competition, then we can go to the bank on that and get those salaries down.
Well, let's talk about the corporation then, because according to, and I've dealt a lot with corporations too, you know, God only knows.
Health insurance.
The way that corporations are set up today, okay, the shareholders don't really have a voice, okay? I mean, you have quote-unquote common shares, you know, for the plebs. Then you have the preferred shares for the insiders, the people who get privilege based off the shares. Then you have corporate boards, okay, who basically, for the most part, are handpicked by the CEO, and they pick the sheeple, the little sheep that are going to follow along with whatever the CEO says, protect their inner circle. And shareholders, ultimately, in this capitalistic system that we live in today, Ron, don't really have a direct say. At least I could say with my government that if I don't like my representative and then the House of Representatives, I can vote to kick him out and be assured that my one vote counts as one vote versus if I want to kick out the shareholder and I happen to have X number of stocks, you know, dollars of stock in a company and I am a common, you know, share and I'm not a privileged share and, you know, it doesn't seem to me that that's fair. It seems that the government system allows you to kick out people who you don't like and are not playing by the rules versus the capitalistic system that we operate in is pretty much rigged for the people up top.
That's completely the opposite of the truth. But the fact of the matter is that, first of all, do not mistake me as someone defending corporations. I defend markets, not corporations. I've already said that I think corporate governance is broken and we need to fix that. That's another conversation. With regard to whether or not, and with regard to shareholder value, the fact of the matter is if I don't happen to like what a corporation is doing, I'll sell my shares and go somewhere else. On the other hand, when I'm being voting for somebody, if he wins by 50% plus one vote, I have to live with him. I cannot get rid of him. I would have to move.
How many CEOs?
I have greater freedom to behave and react to what corporations do, especially as
okay.
a shareholder, by simply dumping it, but I can't dump a politician
all right.
in my town, city, or state.
Well, first of all, you can't dump your – first of all, if you have a stock and say you invested $1,000 and it's malfeasance at the corporate governance level and you've already lost 15 to 20% of your investment, you know, now you're saying take that money and run and you've already lost that money. But the point is if you want to kick out the CEO, you can't do it. Give me this example then, because we all know there's lots of corporate malfeasance going on. We saw that with almost the collapse of the stock market, the collapse of the economy. We saw all the financial sector stocks, you know, just completely almost go under. How many of those corporate CEOs are you aware of? Tell our audience right now that amidst all of that corporate malfeasance and horrible management, how many of them have been voted out by the shareholders?
Actually, lots of them have. For example, the former head of Merrill Lynch is long gone. Many of the former bankers have. Far too many are still there, but lots of people have lost their jobs over what happened, and they should have, and far more people should have lost their jobs over it, I would argue as well. But yeah, lots of people lost their jobs over it.
All right, anyway, you gave me one, but I don't think lots of people lost their jobs. And look, all I'm saying is I don't disagree with capitalism, Ron. I just think that the way that the rules and the regulations are currently set, it's like I said, I love sports, I love boxing. When you have a boxing match, you got two guys who go into the ring, you got a referee, they both know what the rules and regulations are, and if somebody doesn't obey those rules and regulations, they get penalized or they lose the fight.
But
completely.
The problem is that you don't.
But our capitalistic system's not set like that, though. I mean, you really think that the capitalistic system, the way it exists today, it functions the way that Adam Smith and the Invisible Hand intended it to be?
No, because the size of government has gotten too big. The referee is now is subject to being bribed.
So if the referee
has too much money and can be bribed, and this is what we're facing right now. This is why we're having oligopoly, why we're having crony capitalism, not free markets.
Right. So your contention is that if basically the government almost became non-existent, that somehow or another that the free markets.
I said fair and a referee and smaller, not having so much money to direct to the people that it prefers against people that it doesn't prefer.
Right. Right. All right. Well, we'll have to beg to disagree with that, so that's fine. All right, well, listen, in any case, I got a lot of calls I want to get to, but I do appreciate your time on the air today, and your website is www.reason.com, is that correct?
That's correct. And
all right,
thank you very much for having me. Great conversation.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. All right, it's Ron Bailey, ladies and gentlemen, and he is with reason.com. And if you want to learn a little bit more about his philosophy, just check it out, okay? But listen, we do have some callers that I want to kind of get to here. Let's see who's been holding the longest here. We got Danny on the line from Dubuque, Iowa, who's been holding. Danny, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You were talking about Medicare earlier and whatnot. And one thing that with this voucher program is that I don't care who you are, everybody has a pre-existing condition, and that's called life, you know?
Sure.
And you sit there and shell out 15 grand per person or whatever for vouchers and stuff. Basically, what you're doing is you're turning all these medical facilities over to those who can afford medical treatment.
Right.
Because $15,000 in a situation where you have to be, let's say, put in intensive care or something like that.
Right.
And that's like 10 years of your – you could have 10 years with $15,000 that they give you.
No, absolutely. It'll bankrupt you. Listen, hey, Danny, I apologize. I got to go to a break right now, but I appreciate your patience and holding it. Appreciate your commentary. We'll be back with the conclusion of the program. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Alrighty, welcome back. It is now 50 minutes after the hour. The Freedom Express is pulling up to its final stop, its final destination for today. We still got a full board of callers right now. I'm going to get to everybody during this last segment. But again, if you want to email me, I do have some emails. I won't get to them today, but I'll review them tonight, and I will be back tomorrow for Tom and answer your emails live on the air. So my email is mike@mikenewcomb.net. Newcomb is just like old brush, Newcomb. So mike@mikenewcomb.net. And I will do my best to get through all the emails and read them. And also, don't forget, we're broadcasting from our flagship station here in Phoenix, Arizona, 1480 KPHX, of which Tom is part of our family. We're very happy to have Tom as a part of the KPHX family here 3 hours each and every day. So if you want to learn a little bit more about us locally, just check us out at 1480kphx.com. And then there's a hyperlink for our Facebook page as well. So let's get back to the Freedom Lines. I think next up in the queue is Dolores, who's been holding online from Portland, Oregon. Dolores, welcome to the table.
Thank you, Dr. Mike. Can you hear me well?
I can hear you great.
Well, you know, I was just thinking, I was listening to your interview with Ron, and that was a total I can appreciate it from the point of view that we need to hear how other people think, you know?
Sure.
But Ron's mind, you will never get anything in his mind past what he already thinks. So I figure that's an exercise in futility there. But I would like to say I was, as I listened to your conversation with him, I had been thinking that, you know, we have to kind of come together here and see life in reality for what it really is. And I'm an older person, and I think that maybe, you know, and when I say you guys, I mean younger people, I think you're missing the point in this. These people have taken the country over. They're not going to. They haven't just started. They have already put everything in place to do that. And they have conditioned society in such a way that they know they can do it. That's why they are so bold. And as far as you know, they want to take Medicare here, and they want to mess with education here, and they want to block certain people from voting here. Those are just deviations. And
right.
It's not even really about race. It's about power. It's about greed. It's about ruling. That is what this is about. And you have to come to the point and understand that there is evil in the world, that there are lost people in the world, and that you don't have the eyes and the heart and the spiritual wherewithal to see that, you'll be destroyed. They will destroy you. And I worry not so much on them because I know who they are. I see them. I know that they have made their minds up. They have chosen. You know, when they could have chosen light, they've chosen darkness. And they understand the darkness that they've chosen. So I don't care to try to keep explaining that to them. So I think we should refocus and you know, and step back and take a fresh breath of air and reassess where we really are. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Dolores. I appreciate that perspective. And I agree with Dolores. And look, I do think there is evil that exists in the world. And quite frankly, some of the policies that I see the radical conservatives in this country wanting to implement in America, I do not, you know, I do see an element of evil in those proposals. And I will, Dolores, continue to fight against that. I will do whatever I can do as an individual to spread the good word, to spread the light, to touch people's hearts, their minds, their spirits, their souls, and ultimately all unite in solidarity against evil or things that we feel are not in the best interest of our fellow common man and women. And I think ultimately we will prevail. Look, we prevailed in the last election cycle, and Obama won the presidency, and I really believe he's well positioned to do it again. But we must keep up that fight, because evil will never relent. Evil will always try to defeat good, but I am an optimist, and I always believe that good will prevail in the long run. So thank you very much, Dolores, for your position on that. Let's go next to line number one from Chicago, Illinois. We got Mark, who's been holding for quite some time. Mark, thank you for your patience.
Hi, how you doing? Hey, I just want to say that, you know, the Republicans being the party of business and the party of employers, they're all dedicated to, lowering people's wages, lowering people's health care benefits, you know, making healthcare as unaffordable as possible, and then they're going to turn around and say that it's your fault if you can't afford it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you can't apply the entrepreneurial ethics and the standards to people who work for someone else. You know, and another thing I want to say is that your guest, one thing that people like him tend not to acknowledge is that the function of government, the legitimate function of government, is to protect the weak from the strong. And people who are against government are usually people who are the strong, who don't want the government interfering with their taking advantage of the weak. I mean, the purpose of government is more than just being an umpire calling the balls and the strikes, because, you know, in terms of, like, the weak and the strong, there are many ways to protect the weak from the strong. You know, it's not, it's like you can't have a, you can't enter into a contract with someone who has a much greater power over, more power, you know, great imbalance of power, you know, so you can't,
right.
That's why working people, they don't have power individually, so they join together and they bargain collectively, you know. It's a canard to say that, they should just bargain, with the business people as individuals, you know, which is kind of what your guest kind of seems to imply.
No, I agree, Mark. Very well said. Well, listen, I appreciate your call, and I'm going to get to another caller here. Thank you very much. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I don't think we have time for other callers here. So what we will do then is we will definitely encourage everybody to call back tomorrow. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb here sitting in for Tom Hartman today. And I will be available for your calls tomorrow, as I said. And you guys got the phone number here. I'll give it to you tomorrow. I'll give it to you. 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. And a special thanks to Tom for the opportunity and the privilege to sit in this chair and to speak to such a great audience with many, many good ideas and thoughts. So stick with it, my friends, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.